to have you here. I hope you're having a good day or good evening wherever you are. I'm Henrik, and you are listening to Red Ice Radio. Today we are speaking with Alex Newman, who returns to discuss his latest, Crimes of the Educators, how utopians are using government schools to destroy America's children. This does also, unfortunately, apply to basically everyone in Europe and pretty much around the world who has adopted the school system that first subjugated the people in the Western world. Well, Alex is an international journalist who has a Bachelor's of Science in Journalism from the University of Florida. He is also an educator, author, and consultant, in addition to serving as president of the small media and information consulting firm Liberty Sentinel Media. He writes for a wide variety of publications in the U.S. and other countries. He currently serves as a foreign correspondent for the New American Magazine and is a contributor to WND. He has also written for numerous newspapers and magazines. He has co-authored two books, including then a just-released major exposé called Crimes of the Educators, uncovering the plot to dumb down American children using government schools. And that's what we'll be discussing today. Hey, Alex, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us again. It's good to speak with you. How have you been?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Henrik.
Oh, you bet. So you're still in enjoying Sweden, by the way?
Yeah, we're thinking of other options, but there's obviously some very nice things about Sweden too. So it's lots of decisions to make.
Well, exactly. I'd see if we could I might ask you some about that a little bit later. But things have definitely changed in Sweden too, though, since last time we spoke. And seems to me anyway, things are going quicker down the slippery slope, circling that drain, if you will. But let's hold off on that for now and focus a little bit more on the topic at hand here today. You've co-authored a new book called Crimes of the Educators. Give us the background on how the book came together, Alex.
Sure. Basically, Sam Blumenfeld, my co-author, he's written, I think, like 10 books on the subject of education. He's been, on the front lines of this battle for 60 years, just digging through, the records and the letters and the university files. He is really something special when it comes to the topic of education. And I had been focused more, in recent years, even in Sweden and in the United States, looking at kind of the modern happenings, right, with the homeschooling explosion and then the government's efforts to stamp it out, like in Sweden especially, but other places as well. And then here in the United States, we have obviously the Common Core, which was a huge issue. And I started writing about this a few years before it became kind of the scandal that it has become now. And also I had focused a little bit on the role of the United Nations in all of this. People think that it's silly that the UN would be involved in education, and it sounds silly, but it's actually going on, and it's been going on for a long time. And so that's kind of what I brought to the table, looking at, what's going on now and where this is all going in the future if people don't wake up and put a stop to it. And so, the combination of all of Sam's encyclopedic knowledge of what's been going on in education for the last 100 years and even before, with all the research I had been doing on current events and projecting the lines out toward the future, I think we made a good team here to cover this subject in depth, looking at the full spectrum of things that need to be examined.
Now, we'll get into the history of all of this a bit later and talk about, of course, where this is going. But let me ask you, why is the UN involved at all? I mean, and how long have they been part of the I guess we could divide it up. Specifically the American educational system, of course, but UN is a global, organ, if you will, and they have their fingers in all the different pies of the different nations out there. But let's focus on America for a bit. When did they get involved?
The UNESCO, it was founded in the 50s. The UNESCO is the UN Agency for Education, Science, and Culture, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. And right from the get-go, it was very clear what this institution was designed to do. I mean, and back then, they were actually even less shy about promoting their wacky ideas than they are today, although it's still pretty out in the open for anyone who cares to look. But, right from the very beginning, they put Julian Huxley in charge, and he identified the mission of UNESCO. We need to build a culture through education that will allow us to have a global government, a global culture based on humanism, that, you know, is going to supposed to lead us to this new world of peace and prosperity and happiness and understanding and all these kinds of wonderful things. So that's the vision that they set out to implement. Now, there's been some speed bumps on the road. You know, they bureaucrats at the UNESCO have been very, very busy for decades trying to impose global education standards and these types of things and try to influence education at the national level. Lately, they've been extremely successful, but they've had some speed bumps. Ronald Reagan, for example, said, you know what, we're not going to participate in this lunacy. We withdrew from UNESCO. He said it was anti-American and anti-freedom. And so we withdrew for a while and we stopped sending them money. But, you know, as it goes with government programs, they never really disappear. And eventually we rejoined UNESCO. And there's some, you know, extremely alarming things that they've been involved in, even going back decades. And I'll cite one example, the World Core Curriculum. Now, probably 99.9% of the planet would be very surprised to learn that UNESCO has a World Core Curriculum for your children. And I was pretty surprised when I found out about it, too. You know, since when does the United Nations decide what our children need to learn? You know, people in Sweden might be more used to this idea, more familiar with the idea. At least in the United States, the notion that, you know, unaccountable international bureaucrats led by a Communist Party operative, currently the woman in charge of UNESCO right now, that's a crazy idea. Why would we have that? But they did develop this World Core Curriculum, and it's worth taking a look at. I mean, Bill Gates, for example, the financier of Common Core here in the United States, he put more than $2 billion into Common Core. 10 years ago, he signed a deal with UNESCO to develop a master curriculum and all kinds of educational technology programs to basically get the whole world on the same page, like Julian Huxley was advocating, to create this global humanist culture. So Robert Mueller, he was the Undersecretary General of the United Nations for quite a while. He died a few years ago, but he's the one who really drafted the World Core Curriculum. Now, looking at Mueller's background, I think should also offer people some insight into what he was working on, and also, you know, it should ring alarm bells. Just to give, you know, a few examples, he considered himself a disciple of Alice Bailey. You know, Alice Bailey is not especially well known today, but she should be. Her role on history has been very large. She, among other things, she founded the Lucifer Publishing Company. This was kind of a UN-promoting apparatus. And this might all sound ridiculous, but it's very easy to verify. She wrote a number of books. She claimed that she didn't really write the book. She said that she was allowing these ascended masters to possess her and that they were writing through her. One in particular, she called him the Tibetan, would you know, supposedly possess her and then do these writings. And then she put them in book form. She had externalization of the hierarchy, education, and the New Age. So, you know, a lot of these new agey people have been very involved with the United Nations and with the global education movement. And it's kind of all coming to a head now where you have the United Nations and the UNESCO openly bragging. They just put out a report last week, I believe, celebrating how far they had come in their Education for All initiative. Now, what is the Education for All initiative? It's got a pretty long background to it. But in 1990, governments and dictators around the world came together and they decided, hey, we need, you know, education for all, they called it. And who could be opposed to education for all? But one of the things I did for the book was I looked through all of these, you know, seemingly boring UN agreements and documents and treaties and statements and this kind of stuff. And when you read through the bureaucraties, you know, it's just shocking the stuff that they have in there. So under the guise of educating everybody, they're talking about mandatory changes in attitudes and values and beliefs and, you know, they phrase it all in language that sounds very nice. Like, we need gender equality. And so to achieve gender equality, we're going to have to, you know, change everybody's values using the education system. But, you know, regardless of what you think about gender equality, first of all, that's not really what they're talking about here. This is part of a much more sinister agenda. When they say gender equality, they don't mean what you and I think, you know, that men and women ought to have maybe equal rights and these types of things. They're talking about something much broader. And they've been clear about that. So, you know, then 10 years later, they got together in 2000 and they signed another one of these global education documents. And they laid out 15 planks for where they wanted to go with global education. And they decided, you know what, all humans require certain knowledge. And that knowledge, of course, is going to be decided by UNESCO. And they decided, okay, well, if all this knowledge is going to be required of every human to enter this new wonderful age of peace that we're going into under the United Nations, then we're going to need some very serious educational initiatives. So one of the things that we're promoting, to give you an idea, is national standards. Every country needs to have national education standards so that they can all – and all these national education standards, of course, need to be aligned with the international standards that the UNESCO is pushing. And then to monitor compliance with these national standards, we need to have national testing programs that are aligned with the national standards. So for Americans, that probably sounds very familiar at this point. We have national standards under the guise of this Common Core. I call it Commie Core or Obama. Yeah. we've got the federally funded testing regime in place. And UNESCO just put out a report saying how great. You know, we went from basically no countries with national education standards to something like 100 countries with national education standards. So we're making great progress. We need to do more, of course, you know, the UNESCO thinks. But hey, this is really great progress in implementing our 15-point agenda to radically reform education around the world. And that's where we are today. I mean, the UNESCO is pushing pornographic sex education in all of our schools and all around the world. I mean, they put out reports literally saying that the kids, you know, from 0 to 5 need to be introduced to masturbation and homosexuality and homosexual marriages. And then when they get a little bit older, they can learn about you know, things that are too pornographic for me to even discuss on a radio program.
Yep.
But that's the kind of stuff they're pushing on our students.
Yep, you're right. And I wanted to ask you, there's a lot of points of what you brought up, Doug. We can examine it more in depth here. But you talked about the World Core Curriculum. I didn't know about this either. And does UNESCO pretend to be politically impartial? Because just as you explained, most of the people seem to have a foot in either socialist parties or flat out the communist party. I think Irina Bokova, who is the current head, I think she is. She was part of the communist party from 1990, and then they rebranded, of course, to the socialist party after that point in Bulgaria. And she's also the daughter of Georgi Bokov, who was the editor of chief in the official newspaper of the Bulgarian communist party. So. That seems that they're not kind of impartial when it comes to the political aspect here.
You're exactly right, Henrik. And what you said about the head of UNESCO right now, this Irina character, is right on the money. And, you know, the whole entire organization is dominated by these types of characters. If you look at who chaired their most recent general meeting, where they bring all the kind of governments and dictators together to have this big meeting, it was a Chinese communist, an operative from mainland China, you know, loyal to Beijing, obviously. So you have these international organizations run by actual communists. And it's not just the Red Scare and fearmonger. These are actual communists with documented communist backgrounds or actively serving communist party-run dictatorships who are running this UN education agency. And the whole time they're pretending like this is all just, you know, neutral, philosophically neutral, religiously neutral, just knowledge that all humans need to have. But if you examine this so-called neutral and content-neutral and value-neutral knowledge, what you'll find is that it's anything but that. And, you know, Swedish people are probably, at least the ones who listen to your show, are probably very familiar with this kind of stuff. The government there pretends like they have a philosophically and religiously neutral curriculum. That is absolutely untrue. Yeah. You know, just saying that is a value statement in and of itself, that somebody could be objective in those areas. But this is happening at the global level. It's, you know, it's no accident. It's all by design. And they tell you openly that the goal is to change the values and the attitudes and the beliefs and the behavior of, you know, all of humanity using the education system.
Now, do you think that they have an agenda to, I don't know, fulfill the dictates of, let's say, communist international or something like that, to try to create this kind of, you know, global, you know, communist state? It's not far-fetched for us to go there, I think, when we consider the people involved, right?
You're absolutely right, Henrik. And one of the things that I think is most astounding is that they talk about all this stuff openly. We don't need to engage in any theorizing to say that this is their agenda, because they've told us this is their agenda. Going back to Julian Huxley, the first head of the UNESCO, he told us what he was doing. He wanted a world government, a world culture based on humanist philosophy. You know, that's what they're moving towards. So we don't have to speculate. They tell us they're building a new world order. They tell us what this new world order is going to look like. We can see that it's dominated by communists and totalitarians and utopians and self-described progressives. So, you know, there's no need to theorize here at all. It's all out in the open. And that's one of the things that we do in the book is just get together all the primary source documents. They're available on the UN's webpage. They're not hiding this in any sense. The thing is, the media is not reporting it. So people get shocked when they hear this and they say that couldn't possibly be true. So we spent a lot of time on the bibliography, making sure that, first of all, we're using primary source documents. It's coming straight from the horse's mouth. If you want to argue, argue with the UN, because they're the ones who put the documents out saying these things. And secondly, we just wanted to make sure that, you know, it's not us saying this. This is them saying this and us telling you that they're saying it. So, you know, if you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at the media for not connecting the dots and not reporting on these things.
Yeah, exactly. Now, so they're targeting the children or the education system, I guess, because they want to get to the children. They want to try to attain control over them, their reference frame for reality. As we've seen in Sweden as an exemplary country in this department, banning homeschooling, saying, you know, we don't want the bias of the parents to be imposed on the children. So it's better to leave it to the professionals. Let us take care of that, right? So, but let's speak more about how they're seeking to transform the education system. They're already doing that. I get that. But and then we can extend it to the why. Why they're doing this? Is this simply for gaining control politically, or is there other reasons behind this, do you think?
You know, I think most of the players in here have their, you know, their own unique motivations. Like, one thing that you notice here with the Common Core, for example, is that you have the big business community supporting this. And you would think, you know, big business would not want a bunch of dumbed down workers. You know, who's going to engineer the products of the future? Who's going to solve the problems of the future? So you would think that big business would not be supportive of this, but in fact they are. If you look at all the big business associations here in the United States, the Chamber of Commerce, the U.S. Business Roundtable, they're all fully in favor of this Common Core standards. So, you know, and Bill Gates, why would Bill Gates want something like this? Well, one thing we can look at is, you know, what he does. He put $2 billion into Common Core, to develop it, to promote it, to buy off the think tanks, to, you know, bribe legislators and governments to impose it. Yet when you look at where he sends his kid, they go to a nice private school where Common Core is absolutely forbidden. So if it was such a great idea, if Bill Gates really was just this wonderful philanthropist who wants the best for your children, you would think that he might send his own kid to some place where they use the Common Core that he paid to develop. But he doesn't. And, you know, the methodology behind this, it's not new, and that's one of the things that, you know, Sam is a real expert on this, and the documentation is incredible. This began more than 100 years ago. You know, we trace it at least in part to John Dewey. Now, John Dewey was an American. He was a socialist, and he wasn't happy with the situation in America. It was a very biblically oriented country. There was, you know, a very firm Christian church, and, you know, everything was he considered to be individualistic and, you know, free market, and how can people have all this freedom to guide their own lives? And, you know, how can we centrally plan things if everybody knows how to read and can decide the future for themselves? So he set out to destroy that deliberately. And we reprinted one of his essays in our book that is just so revealing. I mean, he knew that this was an evil plan. He knew people would resist it if they knew about it. One of the quotes we quote a lot is, you know, change must come gradually, because to force it unduly would favor a violent reaction and would jeopardize its ultimate success. So he knew that people would never tolerate this kind of insanity.
Let me ask you, Alex, before you remember where you were there, but let me just ask you, does he reason why he wants to do this? Is there an explanation why he sees that this is the better way to go in his writings?
You know, he pointed to a novel. It was published in 1888 by Edward Bellamy, called Looking Backward. And this was a novel, it was a fiction novel, right? And it was about a hypothetical communist utopia in the United States by the year 2000, where there would be no private property and kind of everything was collectivist and everything was for the good of the community. You know, you probably hear this rhetoric a lot nowadays. Then that was extremely radical. You know, people promoting no individual rights, everything should be for the good of collective. People would laugh at you and say that's quackery. But John Dewey thought that was a great idea, and the Rockefellers agreed, so they gave him millions and millions of dollars to promote this quackery. And the chief element of his strategy was to destroy the literacy of the American people. Now, at that time, you know, we did have government schools. Government schools had been set up for the purpose of, you know, teaching kids to read so that they could read the Bible. You know, America was a very, very Christian country at that time, and it was just obvious and well understood that everybody needs to be able to read the Bible, or, you know, you can't be a properly functioning human being. So everybody knew how to read. We were the most literate society on the planet at that time. And that troubled John Dewey. In this essay, The Primary Education Fetish, he openly expresses his disdain for this notion that, you know, kids need to learn how to read, and he considered reading to be a very individualistic activity. He thought it promoted individualism, and, you know, reading happens kind of in your own mind, right? It's just you and the book or the author of the book one-on-one, and he thought this promoted individualism and it, kind of the things he didn't like and that were incompatible with collectivism. So he set out to destroy that as well. He wanted to get rid of early literacy education. He not only didn't think it was necessary, he thought it was an evil. And maybe the most criminal thing he was responsible for, and you know, this is probably going to sound outrageous to people. So what I encourage people to do, you know, if you don't want to buy the book and read our documentation, look it up. The information is out there. He began pushing this method of reading called the look-say method. Sometimes it's called the whole word method or the sight method. There's a number of different terms that they use to conceal what they're doing. But the simplest way to summarize it is basically they're teaching children to read English or, you know, Swedish or whatever language that uses phonetic characters as if it were Chinese. So, you know, throughout the history of our language and our civilization, people have learned to read the phonetic way because we have a phonetic alphabet and a phonetic language. If you want to learn how to read, you need to know what sound each character makes, and, you know, you need to know how they interact with each other so you can decode the message. Now, John Dewey's method, the method he was promoting, this look, say, this sight method, you look at the word as a symbol, the word becomes a character in and of itself, just like how you would read a Chinese. You know, you have these, these symbols, and you look at the symbol, and then you extract from that the concept that the symbol is supposed to represent. Now, that alphabet, you know, they don't have an alphabet. It's totally alien to our system. And John Dewey knew that this was quackery. They had done experiments with this in the 1800s, and they said, oh, my goodness, that's terrible. It doesn't work. You know, barely anybody can even learn how to read using this method. And so we definitely can't use this. And John Dewey said that means we definitely have to use that. And so he got money from the Rockefellers. He set up an experimental school where he used this. And, you know, he produced a bunch of dyslexics who couldn't read. And he thought, this is great. This is what we need to do in the whole country. Started taking over educational colleges. And that's where we are today. The government schools all across this country are teaching children to read English as if it were Chinese. And that's why we have such widespread illiteracy. And the government acknowledges this illiteracy. In 93, they did a survey, and they said 55% of American adults can barely read. They are functionally illiterate. You know, this is outrageous. This is ridiculous. You can teach a four-year-old how to read in a matter of weeks with the phonics method, which is the way that, you know, people have always learned how to read our alphabet and our language. But with the look-say method, with the sight method, they're graduating people out of high school who can't read their high school diploma.
It's amazing.
It's true.
Let me just ask you more about that, because I haven't heard of it. Means they have to have a visual cue then, so that they, you know, they teach it, as you say, with looking at it at the same time as they're saying it, to make the, and that's to change the association to each letter, correct?
Exactly. So instead of decoding the meaning of a word by what the letters sound like and what the word means, one of the ways they do is flashcards. They'll put a word on a flashcard and then maybe the picture of what that word is supposed to represent next to it. And then you're supposed to memorize what the word is. So if you see like a few squiggly lines in a particular order, that's supposed to be cat. But you don't determine that by saying that spells cat. You determine it by looking at the word cat as a symbol and then realizing, okay, this symbol represents cat, and therefore when I see a symbol that looks like this, I need to think of a cat in my mind.
So the entire word, that's what you're saying, not only each letter, but actually the entire word as a symbol.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Like in Chinese. So the word becomes a symbol rather than letters. The letters are essentially irrelevant except for that they make up the symbol. And, you know, this is absolute quackery. It produces dyslexia. It produces illiteracy. And the people responsible for foisting on this on our government schools understood this 100% full well, and that's why they did it.
Wow. So when did do you know if this is in place in Sweden, for example, and is it in place in most American schools now?
It's in place in most government schools in the United States and even in a lot of private schools. And actually, I was looking at some of the phonics reading books that are supposed to teach you how to read with phonics, and even these are teaching to read using the sight method, believe it or not. So parents need to be very wary of that. As far as Sweden goes, I actually don't know, but I do know that UNESCO is promoting this quackery for the entire world. We have a report where they say, you know, phonics, yeah, it's okay, you know, maybe you can mix a little bit in there, but really what we need to be focusing on is the sight method. So UNESCO wants the entire world to learn to not read using this quack methodology.
You know, we did a show on the dropping IQ levels worldwide due to heredity alone. When you add the aspect of just also the schooling system dumbing down, meaning that people, even if they were at their highest, you know, IQ level, we still wouldn't get there. But now, of course, we're not only they're not going to be able to enable the IQ that people already have by dumbing them down in this way. This is, I mean, the end results of this, Alex, is disastrous. If we look, 20, 30 years down the line, even with more and more kids being educated, getting jobs and stuff like that, what's gonna happen here? I mean, it's gonna just completely collapse if this continues.
Yeah, and I mean, the implications are so huge, it's frightening to even think about it because, you know, reading is really the key method where individuals are able to acquire knowledge independently. If you can read, you can research things yourself. You can read the Constitution and know what the Republic is supposed to stand for. You can read your Bible. You can read your history textbooks. You can read your science books. You can acquire knowledge on your own, independently. You don't need to rely on the fake media and, you know, the fake schools to have an understanding of things. You can, you know, learn the truth on your own. And when you reduce or remove the ability to gather knowledge independently, you end up with absolute ignorance, widespread ignorance, and no way of remedying it. You know, suppose somebody woke up and said, hey, I don't believe I've been told the truth, but hey, I can't read. So what am I going to do? You know, I can try to watch videos or something. But, you know, reading is absolutely essential to everything, to maintaining our civilization, to maintaining our liberty in the United States. If people can't read, if people can't read the Constitution, they don't even know what they're losing, much less how to protect it.
Yeah. So literally going backwards to the days when reading was kept out from certain people. Now, is this just done for control purposes then of starting really to guide where civilization is going and that a selected few at the top are going to basically dictate to the rest of us that a dumbed down kind of subclass, if you will, that are going to be easily controllable? Or why do you think they're doing this?
That's exactly why they're doing this. You know, I call it neo-feudalism sometimes. They kind of envision this world where they're going to be, you know, the wonderful philosopher kings that Plato talked about, you know, ruling and reigning over us dumb sheeple. You know, they don't want educated citizens with the ability to acquire knowledge, you know, messing up their plans. So if you look at, you know, the divisions between, say, the ruling establishment and the rest of humanity, it becomes very clear. You know, Bill Gates doesn't send his kid to a Common Core school, like I mentioned before. Obama doesn't send his kids to a Common Core school. None of the ruling class are putting their children through this fiasco, through this disaster. Their children are going to, you know, some of the best schools in the world. And, you know, I was very blessed to go to some of these schools. I went to literally, you know, some of the best private schools on the planet. And so I was very blessed in that respect. But, you know, what they're doing in the government schools, they're creating this chasm between the ruling class and the underclass that is going to be literally impossible to bridge. If you have no way to acquire knowledge, you have no hope of ever getting out of the underclass. Never. And that's the idea here. There's supposed to be a ruling class at the top, centrally planning and running everything to create this, you know, they think maybe it's going to be a utopia. Maybe they're just wicked. But, you know, there's not going to be much that the population is going to be able to do about it if they succeed in their plans.
Yeah, let's talk more about Common Core. I've been following this for the last few years, and I've seen some outrageous stuff in that time and certain things that they're trying to push, some things that haven't implemented already. But how does this snuck into the back door of the American education system? Or maybe it wasn't the back door.
In terms of the public understanding of it, it absolutely was the back door. You know, you could have asked, you could have pulled a million people prior to, say, 2009, 2010, and probably not one of them would have been able to tell you what's going on here. Common Core, it basically wasn't announced really until 2013 when they thought it was just, you know, too late for anybody to do anything about it. They said, oh, voila, we have national standards. Your state government or your education bureaucracy has approved them, and tough luck if you don't like it. So it absolutely came in the back door. But this has been a very long-term plan. And, you know, it didn't start with the Obama administration. A lot of people make this out to be Obama's program. In a sense, it is. The Obama administration was crucial in getting it imposed on the states. But, you know, there was a lot of things that preceded Common Core that were absolutely fundamental in having it come about. So we can look at Bill Clinton, for example, and his efforts to start imposing national standards. Then we can look at the George Bush administration with the No Child Left Behind. They said, you know, if you want federal money from the Department of Education, which the state should never have been taking in the first place, and the Congress should never have permitted in the first place, but if you want federal money for your government schools, you have to impose standards that we think are okay. You have to adopt a test to measure against those standards. So, you know, the road had been paved long before. Then Obama came in, during the economic crisis, all the state governments were paranoid. Oh, where are we going to get the money? We're going to have to lay off teachers, that kind of stuff. And so Obama came in with the stimulus money and said, hey, we have an idea. We'll give you billions of dollars if you just agree to surrender absolute and total control over your education system to this Common Core consortium. And it's not even really the government. Yeah, it was funded in large part by the federal government through a number of front groups and trade associations and establishment-connected organizations like Achieve, Inc., which, of course, is run by Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg types.
Mm-hmm.
So this was all brought in through the back door. And then we just woke up one morning, and I had been writing about it for a while when I first got a whiff about it. But as far as public understanding goes, probably still the majority of the American people don't know what's going on with Common Core, but, you know, it's going to affect everyone here very soon.
Yeah, it's really scary. Now, detail to us, how do you think this is going to, what's going to be added onto Common Core in the next few years? It's just going to keep morphing and transforming and ultimately just dumbing down the kids even further? I mean, where's this going, Alex?
That's exactly what's going to happen, Henrik. And, I mean, the starting point is bad enough. I can give some detail just as one piece of evidence that I think is, you know, enough evidence just to prove how terrible these are. The Common Core people, Achieve, Inc., and some of these other front groups that put this together, they put together a quote-unquote validation committee. So this was supposed to be kind of a rubber stamp thing. They were going to look at the standards and approve and say how great they were. They put two subject matter experts on this committee, only two, one for English, one for math. The English expert, Dr. Sandra Skotsky, refused to sign off. She said, no way, this is going to reduce the critical thinking abilities of children. We're removing, you know, all the great works of literature and all the classics and all the, you know, great pieces of fiction that have come down through hundreds of years. The heritage of humanity and the heritage of the West.
Yeah.
We're going to remove all that. And instead, we're going to read executive orders by Obama, and we're going to read, regulations from the EPA about how much insulation you need in your roof. And then we're going to see if we can follow instructions properly and decipher what we need to do based on it. I'm absolutely serious that this is what's going on. So Dr. Sandra Skotsky, and she doesn't oppose national standards. I oppose them in principle. They're not constitutional. They're a terrible idea. Talk about putting all your eggs in one basket. I oppose them on principle. She doesn't. She thinks national standards would be fine, but she said, no, these standards are terrible. I cannot possibly give, you know, my seal of approval to this lunacy. And then in the math section, we had Dr. James Milligram from Stanford, mathematician, and he refused to sign off. He said, nope, these standards are very, very poor quality. The methodologies are just, a lot of them don't even make any sense. And some of these standards, believe it or not, this is amazing, are based on incorrect math. Anybody can go read his letter on why he refused to sign off. So basically every government school in America, even in the few states that didn't adopt Common Core, the Common Core is coming in through the back door there too, they're going to be using incorrect math to teach your kids how to do math. So if you wonder why you can't help your kids with your homework, there's a good place to start looking.
Is that why they're doing it? Reforming it in such a way so that the parents kind of they disconnect the child from the parent. Consequently, they can't help them. Consequently, the child only can go to the school to get the education about these issues. Because I mean, it's the way they're reforming these systems are like completely illogical. It doesn't make sense. It's going to just continue to plumb. I mean, look at the SAT scores; they're going down and down and down all the time. And they have to at some stage saying, okay. Whatever we're doing here, it's wrong. We need to try something else. But it's like that doesn't seem to happen. They just continue to push this very bizarre system on our kids, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Henrik. I think that's one of the really big reasons here is they want to continue to grow the chasm between parents and children. You know, I heard a school administrator not long ago in a news conference saying that the schools are now co-parents. Even in Sweden, I think that would probably be a pretty radical idea that the schools are the co-parents. But what they want to do is make it, impossible for parents to help their kids with their homework. They want to use these faulty methodologies that they know are quackery because it reduces critical thinking abilities. It reduces the ability of children to think independently and to sort through problems and come up with solutions. George Orwell, he talked a lot about, we need to use language in a way that makes it impossible for people to even think about questioning all this stuff. And, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the dumbing down, and there's a lot of purposes to it, but one of them is absolutely to further usurp the role of parents into the hands of the state. And, Sweden is further along in that respect than the United States, but, the whole world is moving in that direction. In the UN Declaration on Human Rights, which is a terrible document, I would never suggest that governments live by this, but they said, parents have a prior right to choose the education of their children. This is not, the role of government. And they said that because of the horrors that we know are produced when government takes control over the educational system. We see it today in communist China. We saw it in the Soviet Union. Kids just get brainwashed, and then horrible things become much easier and much more plausible when you don't have critical thinkers who can say, wait a minute here, I'm not sure starting these wars or putting people in camps or, these kinds of things actually make sense. So, it's very, very troubling where this is all going.
You remember, I was at the MSNBC host, Melissa Harris-Perry, talked about how your kids doesn't really belong to you. They're kind of all of us now. It's all of our responsibilities, and it's very, I'm shocked to see that on American TV. It's amazing how quickly it's gone in America.
Yeah, the MSNBC clip, I think, was really a wake-up call for a lot of people. That ended up getting a good amount of attention, as it should have, because, this is essentially the propaganda arm of the Democratic Party telling us that our kids don't belong to us, they belong to the community. That's a terrible idea from, every possible angle you could think of. And we know, tragedy of the commons, when things don't belong, or when things belong to everyone, nobody actually takes care of them and they get destroyed. But, from a more fundamental perspective, parents are really have the responsibility over children, and it's such a strong bulwark against bad things happening. When you have a central authority controlling everything that people learn, it becomes much easier to do mischief. Whereas if you have, a few parents who maybe don't educate their kids as well as they should, or maybe have, some weird ideas, that's not going to affect the whole society. But when you put it all in, one pair of hands, you centralize it like that, the possibilities for tragedy, multiply exponentially.
So it's really the end of civilization as we know it. If this continues, might sound kind of to jump far ahead in a kind of an extreme position. But the question is, unless they have a backup plan of how they're intending to run the governmental systems in the future, or even at the workplace. I mean, who knows? Maybe they're contemplating, kind of swapping us out for, automated robots or something that are doing the base work. I don't know. But if they don't, I think we can just look around already, Alex, and just realize that things are, quality is getting worse. People are getting more and more stupid all the time. We're not spending our time, exploring space or like thinking about the deeper questions anymore. We are tending to all the minute, smallest details possible about carrying the weight of the rest of the world on our shoulders, at least in the West, for example. And we're not really getting anywhere. Maybe that's the point. Maybe they're outphasing us. What do you think?
It absolutely is the point. And the end of civilization, I think, is a good way to put it. I mean, our civilization is based on things like the family unit and, things like that. And they're undermining that at breakneck speed. They have a drastically different idea of civilization in mind than anything that would even look remotely familiar to somebody who's versed in, the history of the West, the culture of the West. They're breaking down families, and, you know, the schools is a big part of that, going back to the co-parenting by the schools. And, you know, they all know, obviously, that central planning doesn't work. We've had plenty of examples of that. We still have some, Cuba, North Korea, Zimbabwe. I mean, you want to see misery and poverty and starvation, just go to a centrally planned economy, and you'll see it up close and personal. But I think one of the things that these utopians have in mind, and they've been pretty explicit about this as well. The UNESCO has been promoting it. They say we need more of this because this is so great. The Obama administration has been promoting this openly. You know, they talk about the cradle to career education agenda. So one of the things that they're doing is compiling dossiers on every single student that's going through the system. And Common Core is a big part of this, but it existed before. It's just much more massive now. And they think that by gathering all of this information on each child, you know, their academic levels, their beliefs, their behavior, their philosophical underpinnings, their, you know, family background, their IQ, their test scores, they think that by putting all this together, their computers are going to help them become better central planners, right? So they're going to start, you know, assigning people to different tasks and putting people on, you know, you'll be on track to be a mechanic, and maybe, you know, you're doing pretty good. Maybe you can be, you know, something a little better. So I think they think that their computers and their data gathering and their data mining might help in making central planning slightly more efficient and maybe more effective. You know, that would be assuming that they were benevolent. I think that would be a very bad assumption to make.
So communism won the Second World War, and if we look at the ideological people even behind America, the Allies at the time, you know, from FDR, who had his good friend Uncle Joe, Joseph Stalin, to many of those who later kind of infested the Department of Treasury, for example, like Harry Dexter White and some of these people, you know, Keynes, you know, they were really on an ideological basis very much inclined with socialist communist ideas. And then, of course, later in America, you had a reemergence in the 60s of cultural Marxism through the Frankfurt School. And this is really the ideology that has permeated the world now. And I think we're really seeing the fruits of this. And I still don't think many people kind of understand that aspect of it. They think, you know, human rights, they think freedom and, you know, democracy for all. And these can't possibly be tyrannical system. But the reality is they are. And the reality is that they are based in old, you know, standard textbook communist, you know, kind of ideas. But the bottom line is it's also been reformed over the years, Alex. So it's not, you know, on par on every single aspect. Even today, I think that full-on communism in certain aspect would be too radical, too traditional, actually. What we have today is kind of a merger of this that's created a kind of a progressivism that is absolutely horrific in its tyrannical implications. And furthermore, why it's so dangerous is that people don't have that perception about it. They think that it's there to take care of all of us, and it's going to make things better. I guess it is going to take care of us, isn't it?
You're so right about this, Henry. I mean, when I hear people say that, you know, communism died and stuff, I just want to rip my hair out. You couldn't be more wrong. Communism didn't die. It never went away. It was never some kind of benign idea that just didn't work out so well. It was a diabolical plan to enslave humanity, and it never went anywhere. You know, the collapse of the Soviet Union, people said, hooray, we don't have to worry about communism anymore, without even realizing, just read the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. You know, if you live in any society in the West, I guarantee you they'll sound familiar. You know, graduated progressive income tax, government schools for all the children, central bank with monopoly on currency and credit. You know, it's all there. Communism didn't go anywhere. The communists were not punished after, you know, the collapse of the Berlin Wall. The communists from the start were built up by establishment forces in the West, and even Stalin. I mean, you mentioned, you know, FDR and Uncle Joe. People forget about that. The United States and criminals in our government, and some of them were actual Soviet agents and Soviet spies who were convicted and in some cases executed. But, you know, they were building up the Soviet war machine. They built the factories of the Soviet Union. They built the factories that built the tanks of the Soviet Union. And, you know, the collapse of the Soviet Union is interesting. People think that that meant the end of communism. I beg to differ. First of all, the biggest country in the world, 1.3 billion people, is currently enslaved by a Communist Party dictatorship. And people say, that's not communism. You know, they have a little bit of free market now. No, they don't really. They have a little bit of the appearance of that because, you know, they've allowed, you know, private investors to buy into these government-owned companies and so on. But the socialist, communist, totalitarian ideology has always been there, and it's never been an end in and of itself. The people who were promoting this kind of stuff, other than the useful idiots, as Lenin called them, you know, they didn't really believe that we were going to have some kind of wonderful brotherhood of man if we just got rid of private property and individual liberty. This was a diabolical conspiracy to enslave and plunder and pillage their fellow human beings. And, you know, I know it's a little bit off the subject, but there's some excellent books out there by Antonelli Golitschin. He was a high-level operative in the KGB disinformation department, and he made a number of predictions. He published his books in the 80s. He came over to the West and defected, and he outlined what they were going to do. He said, first they're going to liberalize Eastern Europe. It's going to be a fake liberalization. Don't believe it. Then maybe even the Soviet Union is going to come down. But don't believe it. They have plans for, you know, a second revolution, and they want to impose world communism. Now, is communism the end and be all of the threat? Absolutely not. But it is a crucial tool of the people, who want to run the world for nefarious purposes.
Yep. Many people have said it. Even Vladimir Bukovsky spoke out a few years ago now, talking about how the European Union is formulating into kind of a new, Soviet dictatorship, and it's really happening. It's, I mean, okay, sure, there's certain, it on a material level, yet it's not as as bad, but on a you know, what do you call it, philosophical level, I guess, on a political level, it definitely is. And look at, for example, political correctness. Look at how they're clamping down on free speech. This comes through the back door usually now these days of self-censorship, for example, and these are, you know, this is just a different approach to making, you know, having the same goal achieved, basically, isn't it, Alex?
Yeah, and one of the things that's interesting is that at least in the Soviet Union, you know, people knew that this was lies and propaganda. You know, if Pravda put out an article saying, hey, wonderful Soviet citizens, the Soviet economy is doing great, everybody knew that that was a lie, that that was ridiculous, and, you know, nobody believed it. But nowadays, they've become so effective, and they've refined these techniques to such an extent that people believe this stuff. They believe that they're free, that they believe that they control their own destiny, and that their rulers are just doing things for their own benefit. And, you know, how did we get to this point where people became so dumbed down? I think that the answer to that is going to be fundamental in determining whether we ever succeed in, you know, preserving civilization and liberty and everything else that's good.
Well, Alex, let's speak more about that in the next segment. I want to talk more about how, you know, to kind of break out from this a little bit as well. But there's a lot of other components of the book we haven't spoken about yet. But please give us the details here. I want you to give us the details about how people can buy the book, where they should go, and also, of course, give us some of the website that you'd like to plug to our audience where you write some of your material.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Henrik. So the book is called Crimes of the Educators, How Utopians Are Using Government Schools to Destroy America's Children. It's by Sam Blumenfeld and I. And if you're in Sweden, you can get it through Adlibris or whatever. I think you can order it online there. I think it's 200 crowns or something. If you're outside of Sweden, you can get it on Amazon.com. All the big retailers are carrying it, at least online, Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble. And then if you want like an autographed copy or something, you can always get it from the publisher directly. It's WND Books, and you can get it at the WND Superstore. I think just go to WND.com and then just click on the Superstore button, and you can get it from there. So that's where people can get it. As far as reading some of the stuff I've written, I write for WND, which, you know, WND Books is the one that published this. I also write a lot for the New American Magazine. You know, I consider it one of the best publications out there, if not the best, in terms of explaining, you know, the reality and what's going on behind the headlines and behind the propaganda. And then, you know, my articles appear all over the place. If people are interested in finding more, you can just type my name into a search engine and any topic, and you'll generally come up with a lot of stuff there. So,
all right, very good. We'll have some of these links up here to WND WorldNet Daily. Is it, is that what it's short for, right?
Yeah, exactly. WorldNet Daily.
All right, there we go. Okay, we'll have some links up to that, and of course, do check out the book, folks, for much more. All right, stay with us, everybody. Stay with us, Alex. We'll be right back after a short break. Well, ladies and gentlemen, in the next hour we go even deeper into the objectives of those who have targeted our children with their miseducation, and also in the extension, us, the people of the West, from fake environmentalism to questions of overpopulation, insecurity about the resources in the future. We've started now to have less children in Europe, America, but also Australia and New Zealand in the Western world, basically. While at the same time, the United Nations have been advocating replacement-level migrations into these countries, a replacement of the population, basically. They also target Russia and Japan in this report. Why is that? Why do they want to see us off from this world so bad? We speak about all the unpopular and suppressed pieces of information that has been held from us so that they can maximize the guilt that we are supposed to feel about who we are, and also how the skewed cultural Marxist lens on history is being used against us at every turn. We continue to speak about the United Nations, the CPS, Child Protective Services, mandatory vaccination, the plummeting SAT scores in America, and a whole lot more. But we'll wrap up speaking about the dire, very dire situation in Sweden as well. So please stay with us as we continue in the second hour here. RedIceMembers.com is where you can acquire a subscription and continue to listen to this second hour coming up with Alex Newman. You, of course, also get access to all our previous programs. We do have a lot of radio for you in our archives, but we also have videos, TV shows, insight episodes, and a whole lot more. If you sign up, you also at the same time, of course, help to support a truly independent media that follows the trail of where the information takes us, even if that means going into controversial and uncomfortable areas. We want to know, and we hope that you do too. All right, we'll talk to you on the other side of this break.